Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Gina Torres. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Hey!
Hello, my geeklings!
Welcome to Geeks On.
Yet another one.
It's been so long.
Around 2 weeks.
Well, then we'll release this probably a week later, and so everyone will think it's
so
been...
So how are your geek weeks, then?
Who the heck are you people, anyway?
Oh, sorry.
Hi!
I'm Matt. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks. I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
Hello, my name is Donald Marshall. I am a video game professional and writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
Hi, I'm Pete Robinson. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Yes, he is.
Excellent.
So how was your geek week's been? Like, since Comic-Con, really?
Yeah.
By the way, did you guys download the demo of Batman
Arkham Asylum?
I haven't tried it yet.
It's fun.
Of the voices from the Paul Dini version.
Oh,
I have
but,
to say, I didn't like that.
With the Unreal Engine, in terms of how it's...
It looks like the Unreal Engine.
It looks like the Unreal Engine. It's a much more realistic version.
It's like Sam Fisher meets Batman.
Yeah, it looks like Batman.
But more action.
Beautiful.
And it looks, all of the art looks like Batman from the cover of The Killing Joke.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't, you know what, I think that the voiceovers are too, well, first of all, Joker sounds like Stewie from...
That's straight out Paul Dini, that's the Paul Dini, that's Mark Hamill. That's
well, it sounds like the Family Guy dude.
Actually, I'm not agreeing with you.
You're going
on
to
that.
Get hate mail. For
yes.
This,
well, so. Play the game and tell me.
I'm not agreeing with you or disagreeing with you in that one. But what I did notice though was, as much as I love these voices, right? I love these voices. Mm-hmm. In watching the trailers, I thought maybe the voices seemed a little too cartoony.
Yeah, they're camp
for
the
art
style. I totally agree.
Didn't quite mesh for me.
There's kind of a gritty, real, dark, and then this is very. It's almost into the campy.
Yeah, I mean, I love Harley Quinn, but didn't work.
They put her in a trailer. They put her in a weird. Did you see the bodice?
Yeah, that was a weird costume.
That looks awesome. She just sounds like she's from the '60s.
Yeah, that's what
television
she's,
show.
That's what she's supposed to sound like. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, she does that.
I would have been a little more Batman Begins.
It's a character you got to respect. I mean, launched for a cartoon that retrofitted into the comic book.
Yeah. It looks like The Dark Knight, but it sounds like
her and Renee.
It sounds like that. Have you watched the cartoon?
No,
watch the cartoon. It's really cool.
Oh,
and
really
I didn't. By the way, I didn't. I don't listen to the read comics. I didn't know that Batgirl got crippled. And apparently that happened like 10 years ago.
Spoiler.
That happened like 15 years ago.
Well, I didn't know that.
Possibly.
And she,
she's
like,
Oracle now.
Yeah, I'm looking up.
Did you not listen to any of our discussions about Birds of Prey?
Yeah.
I am the weapon. I completely ignore
He ignored
anything.
Us, Don, is what he did.
I don't listen to you guys.
I don't talk to you guys.
All right, anything else? You play the Ghostbuster?
I've been playing Magic late at night with Paris.
Xbox. I saw you last night, two nights ago.
I'll download that and give it a try.
It's good.
It's fun.
I enjoy it.
It's Magic, just straight out.
And you can, it's straight out the Magic game. You can make your decks really cool, and then you can also play multiple people. You can play four people against each other, which is really cool.
Huh, interesting.
And you're like, why are you all picking on me?
Anybody play the Ghostbusters demo?
Pete, actually, I played the game.
Oh, how was that? It seemed okay demo.
It was more fun for the kitsch of the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The actual gameplay was all
right. Right.
You know, and it was fun to play a Ghostbuster, but...
Yeah, it seemed fun to, like, hit the guns, the whatever gun it is. Can't remember the Ecto.
Yeah.
It seemed fun to use, but I didn't really...
It was okay.
Okay.
It was okay. It was fun. It was fast.
Got it. Okay.
I also introduced our youngest listener, Thomas, to Left 4 Dead today.
You're tainting our
Peter.
Youth.
Yeah.
Corrupting the youth of tomorrow.
His mom's going to come over here and smack
you. You know, I got her permission first.
His mom's going to play the game.
Mom
are you
permission?
Kidding?
That's hilarious.
We talked about it, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Wait a minute.
I can see his mom playing
She
this
edits
game.
Our episode, but lets him play Left 4 Dead. I see.
Well, we talked about it first because they're... You know.
Brains are okay, boobs are not.
Well, I'm not showing my boobs.
How about brains on boobs?
Well, depends on how
do you see the headshot. We'll do it.
That's true. Do you see the hammer hit it beforehand?
Anyway, I gotta say, I was pretty impressed.
Was he good?
He's good.
That's because the reason is because he's been sneaking playing it for probably 6 months now.
His friends have for 2 years.
By the way, also I bought my little girl her the first Dungeons and Dragons character level 0 onesie.
Oh, good.
It's awesome.
Is she old enough to wear those outfits I bought yet? So she can dress.
No,
little
she won't be. She won't be old enough to wear those until she's 3.
Slave Leia. Is
that what really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize they were that
big.
They're big. Oh, I had no idea. Yeah. Okay.
And I also have to show you this. This is.
I'm not good at baby stuff.
You have your kid. A picture of your kid with the Xbox headset and controller. And how old is your child, Matt?
She's 3 months.
Yeah, see, this is the reason why Xbox Live sucks, is because this is the average age of...
I think I've played people younger than her on Soul Calibur.
My wife saw that, and she just said, oh, Matt, oh, no. No, Matt, no.
So did you tweet... You should tweet that. Have Geeks On tweet that.
Yeah, I'll have Geeks On tweet that.
Shall we do a little news?
I think we should.
Let me just do a quick update. I want to thank all of the kind geeklings who've been sending me letters of support during my stint of weight loss over the past 9 months now since the surgery. Yeah. So
skinny mini here.
Quick update for all of you. I have officially lost 145 pounds since November, and that puts me up to a total of 215 pounds since last January.
So that is unbelievable.
I am.
You've lost different... more than me.
Yes, I have lost an Aaron.
Over an Aaron.
Yeah, over. Me and half my dog me. And your kid and...
Yeah, easily.
A lot of flesh.
That's so, a lot of human beings.
Yeah, I still got farther to go.
Me not and a stripper yet. On my back.
But so a quick thank you to all of you who keep sending in those awesome letters. It's much appreciated. It's nice to know you're not going through it alone. Yay.
Yay.
Oh. Shall we hit it?
Yeah.
Why all not? Right. So the curious case of
Hold on.
Brooke. What?
You forgot to play the music.
Oh, sorry.
Awesome. I love that music. That's hot.
All right. So, the curious case of Brooke Greenberg. All right. Like most 16-year-olds, Brooke Greenberg enjoys shopping and listening to rock music. But unlike other girls her age who are learning to drive and going to the prom, Brooke still wears diapers, travels in a stroller, and can't walk or talk.
I heard about this.
Like a toddler, Brooke is 2.5 feet tall and weighs only 16 pounds. For the past 10 or 11 years, she's looked the same, says Brooke's father, Howard Greenberg. The price is she's adorable. She stopped aging at the right age. So, you know, long and short of it is she's been roughly 2 years old for a very, or 3 years old for a very, very long time.
But now, and I hear that she, mentally, she's not growing.
Mentally, she has not grown up either. Mentally, her
why is that?
Let's see.
They actually don't know.
Yeah, they don't know.
Because maybe she's putting everyone on.
No, not at all.
By looking like a baby for 12 years.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But mentally.
Oh.
Like, she could totally be a Claudia, you know?
Well, she's Stewie.
Yeah.
Stewie.
Yeah, she's kind of... Brooke is Dr. Richard Walker, a biomedical researcher and editor-in-chief of Clinical Interventions in Aging, discovered Brooke's mutated gene. Brooke is a unique individual because she has a mutation in the developmental gene that prevents her from aging, and she's in the developmental phase. There's no hope for her, but what she brings to science is information on how we may be able to delay aging. Basically, her body is 3 or 4. Her bones are about 10 years old, and her mind, I believe, is about 3 or 4. No,
so
excuse
I wonder
me.
What
her bones are of a 10-year-old, her teeth are of a 6-year-old, and her brain is less than a year old.
So she's maybe the fountain.
All right, moving on.
Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, Jet Li, Dolph Lundgren, Eric Roberts, Randy Couture, Steve Austin, Terry Crews, Mickey Rourke, Brittany Murphy, Charisma Carter, Gary Daniels, and the Governator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, star in The Expendables.
Have you guys heard about The Expendables?
Absolutely not.
I was totally expecting a Jane Austen novel.
You had me until you said Brittany Murphy and Charisma Carpenter.
Yeah, this is actually, The Expendables is basically written by Sly Stallone. And the concept is it's about a bunch of over-the-hill mercenaries who get sent down to like South America or someplace to go overthrow a dictator.
That's kind of a good idea.
Awesome. It's kind of brilliant.
Well, I saw Rocky Balboa, whatever it was.
Rocky is good, but did you see Rambo?
No, I didn't see Rambo.
Oh,
Stallone has lost his damn mind. he wrote and I think produced that thing, and he's off mad rocking. As a hatter.
Okay.
Are we talking about Rambo 1? What are we talking about?
No, Rambo. The most recent Rambo. Oh,
five.
Like, Rambo, let's see how many body parts we can blow up. Ill loved that movie.
I didn't see that.
Ill's disturbed.
Yes, but we already knew that. So this is definitely going to be a franchise movie. They're hoping that...
After Arnold Schwarzenegger leaves office, obviously.
Yeah. And they're hoping to be able to get in the sequels. They want to get Jean-Claude Van Damme, Jackie Chan, Steven Seagal, and Kurt Russell.
I still haven't seen JCVD, and I've heard all of the wonderful things about it. We should do a movie night.
I totally want to see that. The trailer was freaking awesome.
Yeah. This is what sold me, because I was like, because I even liked the trailer, but somebody said there's a moment in the film where the film breaks, they take Jean-Claude Van Damme on a basic crane lift him up out through the studio ceiling and just have an interview with him where he just talks to camera about everything that's going wrong with his life, and then they bring him back down into everything and it starts over. And I was like, sold.
But the thing you're not mentioning, though, is that conversation is supposed to be the most heart-wrenching, gut-felt, honest moment in filmmaking in years.
Right, yeah.
I'm curious. All right, who's next?
Me? Who's next?
It's you.
See this crazy little figurine I'm holding in my hands?
Why, it looks like an alien made out of...
scrap metal.
Yes.
And plumbing supplies.
Those of you who are listening to this cannot see this piece of art that I bought down at the beach. This is designed by Geiger back in the day. This artist makes different geeky statuettes. They had Wally and R2-D2 and the Predator, I mean, X-Wing fighters, all this stuff, all made out of various metal parts. Like, this is a motorcycle chain and scoops and there's screws and bolts and nuts. Anyway, this is like, I thought this was pretty awesome. I bought it for like $75, which is not bad. They have different sizes ranging from $30 up to about $600 or $700. Wow. Really large pieces. You can get it if you're in California. I'm sure you can get it other places, but down at the beach, you can get it at a place called Titanic.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's an incredibly gay store.
Okay, yeah, maybe. But if you go online
It's a gay store.
If you go online, metalsouls.com, you can order them online and you can see all of them. Every piece is completely different because they're all handmade.
Yeah. But they also have clothing there and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like a clothing shop.
Yeah, and the clothing is just incredibly diesel tight.
Okay.
You know?
So in other words, where
I would buy.
Where you would buy.
Exactly. Excellent.
Metal Souls.
Couple of things really quick. Stephen Marinaccio is a friend of ours, has a production company called More Nachos, and More Nachos Entertainment has acquired the rights to the highly anticipated role-playing game Eclipse Phase. Game veterans Rob Boyle and Davidson Cole are actively developing the feature film script. So
I do remember him talking about this. He saw me down in Santa Monica and was talking about this last year.
Yeah, and transferring the mind digitally across great distances is now the preferred means of travel. And cool, interesting, you know, what awaits us in the deep, empty chill of space. It's cool.
A pen and paper role-playing game.
Becoming
a major motion picture.
Have we learned nothing from Dungeons & Dragons, the movie?
It was wonderful!
No, we actually learned nothing. No one saw
No, we it. Know. No, the other thing was just learn. Very quick, and I hope this doesn't get into us into a discussion, is that Amazon, you guys probably heard about this, erased 1984 from the Kindles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
People paid for it. They refunded them. But the thing that was really interesting was one student had downloaded it and put all of his notes into it, and he lost all of his notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's trying to sue, but the kid needs to just move on.
No, actually, he does have a leg to stand on.
Well, he may, but he needs to move the F on.
No, he needs to get some fucking money off of
this. There's a class action lawsuit waiting to happen here because the terms of their license agreement does not allow them to do that.
Right.
Removing
whether or not they own the rights
is against their license agreement.
Right.
It's one of the few things
it's equivalent to Walmart running into your house and grabbing the book off of your shelf.
Yeah.
Well, it isn't really because it is. I'm curious how this goes. He's suing for something different. I think he's suing for damages because he said Amazon ate my homework.
Yeah,
that's the new.
Yeah,
you know, instead of your dog, Amazon's eating your homework. You know what?
I think he's going to make a buttload of money off of it, and he probably deserves to.
I don't think he's going to make a buttload. I think he's going to get something comparable.
The lawyers are going to get a buttload.
How much do you think he's going to make?
I don't know, but
I don't think he's going to make $1 million, but
maybe.
But if he just makes $10,000, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean,
I just don't believe that the American dream is hoping that something happens so you can sue a big corporation.
And wow, I do that every day.
All right.
My grandfather lived by that. All right, so my news article is just something I found very fascinating. Apparently, house cats mm-hmm. know how to and yet regularly employ a method of mind control on their owners.
Yeah, mine's called annoy my wife till she throws them off the balcony.
That works too.
If you get three of them together, they turn women into crazy cat ladies.
Off think. So long story short, they are using a form of sonic mind control on their owners, where it's purring. A very specific type of purring that elicits the same sort of panic response that a child's cry does. So it's a purring subliminal thing underneath a distressed meow.
Oh, so when they go
they use it regularly first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And it triggers a response in their owners, or their owners don't even know what they're doing. They're just running to get whatever their cat feels like.
Right.
Let me tell you, when you got a 3-month-old who's doing that for real, and then your cat does it, it makes you hate the cat, not get the cat what it wants. We're literally like, he can fucking suffer. Yeah. You know? I'm sleeping for another half an hour.
Yeah. So one of the other things I found very interesting is apparently the cat absolutely knows what it's doing, and it knows that it's morally wrong. Because when they tried to record cats doing this by going over to people's houses first thing in the morning, cats wouldn't do it.
Why would it be morally wrong?
Because they're manipulating you, and they feel bad.
Well, but animals.
I'm actually putting my own two cents on top of that.
Because cats know what a recording device is. Oh no, they're going to record me.
Yeah,
they might.
Long story short, cats don't use it around anyone but their owners, like people they're familiar with. So the only way they could record the specific type of meowing was by giving the owners a recording device.
Huh.
So when they continued to research this, just an additional addendum I thought was pretty cool. Turned out that distressed meowing thing did, however, work on anybody who heard it. So when they loosened up and started using it on other people, even non-owners react the same way.
It definitely makes your hackles rise, but not necessarily in a good way.
Makes you want to play hand kitty.
Yes. Yes.
Anything else before we get to our esteemed guest?
Bryan Singer thing.
Oh, yes. We did want to bring this up. It was announced, well, it was kind of confirmed today.
It was confirmed.
That Universal confirmed that, yes, they have approached Bryan Singer to produce and direct a Battlestar Galactica re-envisioning of the 70s science fiction television show.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do as a movie. That has nothing to do with what we enjoy now as Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I posted it on my Twitter feed, on my Mad King Twitter feed. That the actual original article interview about what they wanted to do with the Battlestar Galactica TV show, what Bryan Singer originally wanted.
Yeah, Bryan Singer wanted to reimagine the television show before.
Odd with. You know, Starbuck older and Apollo older, and
It was actually it was a continuation
Dirk Benedict with with Richard Hatch, and
I don't understand.
Yeah, but this one will be completely different, supposedly.
This is just again, they're remaking things that already exist.
Yeah. Well, what bugged me was that the article where they were talking about it, they said they didn't believe that the Battlestar fan base was in any way rabid or there. They thought it was just a nice, cute little cult. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's the wrong
idea. Yeah, that's probably one of the few sci-fi shows in the past years that have crossed into mainstream.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a weird, but wouldn't it be, before we end this, wouldn't this be a weird and interesting happenstance that maybe Battlestar Galactica ends up being this thing that gets reimagined all the time and almost becomes a thing? about how many, it's like
how many times can we remake Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah, how could you this? You maybe there's a story there that needs to be told in all sorts of different ways. Kind of like there's a lot of mythology is done that way.
The basic concept of humans versus robots is something that can be told a lot of different ways. So
yeah. I don't know.
Only if they re-envision the story, though. I mean, like
You can take the basic concept that humans, have lost their homeworld. Robots have expelled them. And you can take very different concepts on what those robots are and how they...
Oh, yeah, that's sure. The original concept was that the Cylons were lizards and the robots were there to clean the universe.
But I wonder how interesting it would be if, like, in 10 years we had different famous filmmakers all take a take on this
Battlestar
Galactica.
I don't know. Maybe
I
want to
see the James Cameron version.
Yeah, that'd be cool. All
right. I want to see the Terry Gilliam version.
That's true.
All
that's
right.
True. Let's do an interview.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, geek and geeklings, Gina Torres!
Oh my god.
Of the oh so recent Washington Field with me, and before that, Hercules, and was she on Xenodon?
You were not on Xenodon.
I was on Xenodon.
She was Cleopatra.
I was Cleopatra.
Oh, it was
Cleopatra on Cleopatra Tony.
Yes.
Which is weird that you did Cleopatra as a character and then did a show, Cleopatra, almost like right afterwards.
Cleopatra 2525, same producers.
Yeah.
They fell in love with me.
Of course, Alias.
Alias.
And if anybody's watched a small show called Firefly. Or Serenity.
And the little film that couldn't.
Oh, come on!
Serenity.
I love that film.
We all love that film. It just didn't do what we had hoped it would do, or there'd be two more.
Right. True. True death.
And we'd all be dead. We'd be talking about that.
Yes. But we're going to do a little talking about women in sci-fi.
Yeah, and we're going to edit out my hyperventilating in post because I'm sitting across from Gina Torres! Okay, anyway.
He's so not.
He's fine. Okay. Where y'all want to start?
Yeah, how do you want to start this topic?
I'm hyperventilating. I can't.
Well, one thing, one of the reasons why we want to bring this up is we actually have had some of our listeners talk about this topic. We have a lot of female listeners.
Yeah.
And talking about the role of women in science fiction and fantasy. Yeah,
and they get into a lot of flame wars arguments on our boards.
Yeah, I mean, typically in the past, this genre, and I think it still has catered to young males. Young white males, actually.
Exactly.
To be honest. And so a lot of the books, television shows, movies have all, gone down that path and catered to them. So we see some, I think, interesting viewpoints on in all these types of media. But I think it's changing. So that's one of the reasons why I want to talk about this.
Right. Have you seen a change in Gina in the years that you've been doing it since when you started? No, she's shaking her head.
She's done it. It's radio.
She's closing. She's reaching for it.
Well, here's
yes, go on.
The other reason why I thought this would be a good topic for you is because I believe, and Don brought this up a little earlier off mic, is that there is definitely a change from the types of roles that you had an arc in what you have been cast in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's... And I'm wondering if that's following how science fiction's going.
Well, okay. Well, let me ask Don. What do you think her arc is? And then let's see Gina's take on that same arc.
I'm imposing my arc on somebody else. My God. Well, okay.
Take your time. Breathe. All right. It's all good.
Hyperventilating. Mm-hmm. Okay. So first noticed you. Huh?
Did you say hyperventilating?
We can totally work that out.
That's a great word.
I like it.
That's that feeling of looking at that girl that you're never ever going to get.
not even eventually.
You're hyper-eventuating.
So I noticed you first in Hercules, mm-hmm. right? Now, in Hercules, you were playing Cleopatra, who was sort of a one of the stronger female characters they ever introduced on that show, I would say.
Nebula, actually. I was Cleopatra on Xena.
Xena.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I was Nebula the Pirate Queen on Hercules.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Oh, no, yes. You're right. There was a lot more bodice work in that one.
There was. Yes. Yeah, okay. Yes, it was the first and last brass bra I ever earned. So, yeah.
Did you get to keep the brass bra?
No, I did not.
Come on.
I should have.
Did you ask?
You wore a brass bra.
I didn't know it was. I did.
So it was like the typical old school.
Yeah.
Busty girl bikini.
Oh yeah, Hellenistic period. Okay. The whole I had on a it was brass and it was brass cups.
Right.
And
which
and
has got to do a lot for support and protection, right?
Yes, absolutely. Right. Oh, when absolutely.
You, like, in so, case your yes. heart bra, you know.
Yes, and sort of and it was beaten brass, which is great. It was very cool. It was very hot. It was very hot. And it was suede, so it was also hot. But and then suede pants that had little diamond cutouts all the way down the side. And
which
and
aided your fighting boots. In what way?
None, it but it gave me a really...
It distracted the bad guys.
It gave me a freaky tan, flexibility actually. It's what it is what it did.
A freaky tan.
But what I loved about it was I was all about the knives. Nebula was all about the knives. Oh. She had great swords. She had little knives that were attached to her belt that she could throw. And she started off as kind of a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode of that I did was it was a great introduction into the show. Because I'm a pirate. And nobody knew whether I was, you know, good or bad.
Good pirate or a bad pirate.
You know, I kill people, which seems to be a running theme with the characters that I play.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with it, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm righteous.
Righteous in your moral anger.
The bodies I leave in my wake.
That would actually, we should do a Gina Torres death count on our website.
Nice.
And see if some of the geeklings can track how many people you have killed over the years.
Break it down by show and character.
Break it down by show and character.
There we go.
It's the Gina Torres death count. All right, one of you geeklings, that's your job.
Our most violent guest.
Yeah.
Just might be.
I bet you Richard Hatch, you know, Richard Hatch maybe killed. He probably killed three people over Battlestar Galactica.
Ensign Kim, maybe 10.
10.
You know?
Possibly. 10. Possibly. She's racked up hundreds.
Hundreds. About hundreds. It's up there. So we had Hercules. And you're right. She was a very strong character. She was great. That whole series, Hercules and Xena, though, because of Lucy and her.
Lesbian following?
Okay.
there ain't no rules on Geeks On.
She really resurrected, for television in particular, resurrected the Shiro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As it were. So that was very important.
Did you feel that was strongly represented on that show? Because I never could get a bead on Xena. I was always like, I can't tell whether this is action-packed television, which is where it started.
Or soft porn.
Or soft porn. Or whether or not it was really catering to a geek crowd or not. I could never get a read on Xena.
It was such a hit. I don't think it mattered. It clearly filled a niche. I mean, we just hadn't seen anything like that in over 20 years.
Did you like your character and did you like working on the show?
I loved my character. Really? I thought she was great because she was clearly independent, and then she was revealed to be a Sumerian princess.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
That show was all over the damn place.
Spoiler alert.
That show was all over the damn place.
They were probably like,
yeah.
Wait, I got it. Sumerian princess.
I always thought of that show sort of as like the locusts of mythology. They'd move to a different area and then pick every mythology, story of that mythology claim and then move on to Russia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that was what was fun. I was like,
so what was after that? That was
so you actually started out as a kind of geek sci-fi strong character. You weren't the waif getting rescued.
Never the waif, never the ingenue.
Did you have a problem with never the waif?
Oh.
And Gina weeps.
Now, do you actually really regret that?
No.
I didn't think
so. We're going to cast you as the Princess Peach in the Donkey Kong movie.
Because like 98% of women I run into have the exact opposite issues, you know.
Yeah.
Even so, this character was strong, right?
Picturing Gina's.
There's
Princess
still,
Peach.
I mean, there's still the costume, the cheesecake factor from the costumes in that time period.
Yeah. Oh, all of them.
And
yes.
The Pirate Queen again. You're a fighter. You're a warrior, but you're using these little knives, right? Which is sort of like the acceptable woman's weapon in that time period.
No,
right?
I had a sword.
She had.
You had a sword, but you favored the knives, didn't you?
I used them all. I used all my weapons.
She could kill.
And then borrowed a few. Maybe she busted other people out of and our. Let's, you know,
yeah, she could kill with impunity. I think my premise may be blown to pieces.
Not to jump around, but I also had the biggest gun on Firefly.
Well, that's what I wanted to say.
Yes.
Like.
Yeah.
In my mind, then you progress on to Alias at that point.
Well, Hercules 25.
Cleopatra.
Yeah. Then Cleopatra.
Cleopatra 25.
And that was another kick-ass.
Well, that was a big guns one, but it's still, we got a little bit of brass breastplate going on there.
Yeah, it was like three hot chicks with guns.
Yeah.
It was, you know, a guy fantasy.
Was that the pitch?
I mean, right down to the theme song.
I'm sure it was the pitch. I mean, really.
How do you feel about Cleopatra 25/25?
I think it's a classic.
Gina, come on.
Seriously, when I was doing it, I just thought, I'm getting paid. This is fun. This is great. But I really was the Alan Rickman character in Galaxy Quest. I was sitting there every fucking day. Excuse me. You know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, putting on my rubber hot pants, going, I did Shakespeare. I have done the classics.
When you're hanging upside down doing wire work.
Exactly. I've been on Broadway, damn it. Okay, Gina, we're going to wire you up and you're going to, great. All right. And they'd tease me about it. My co-stars would completely tease me about it.
Did you go and do a lot of Shakespeare over the summers when you were when you were working on that show?
No, I would try to do as much as I could that was so different. Every photo shoot that I did, I wanted to wear like ruffles and chiffon and pink.
Plastic hot pants weren't...
Anything just to remind people that there was more, that I'm, you know, this actress. Mm-hmm. And the thing about being a part of this world and a big part of this world that is successful is the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Just embrace you to such a degree that you feel like I'll never get out of these hot pants.
Yeah.
And for an actor, that's scary. Scary thing to come on, especially as you're building a career.
Well, sci-fi genre has, that's I think one of the interesting things about sci-fi and fantasy is the fans lock you, they lock actors in. I mean, mm-hmm. Being cast in a Star Trek series is, I couldn't imagine being scary in one way to an actor, because sometimes
you don't make it out.
You're it. Yeah. You're Star Trek guy. Yeah. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I could see that freaking out someone that, mm-hmm. you know, in the acting career, but I don't know if that happens in other genres.
Well, I think that's lessening. I think it's lessening because the sort of the stigma of going from television to film, people who are huge movie stars are taking roles on television because they have
Gina,
to.
Gina, after Hercules, Xena, Cleopatra, right. What was your next big step from there?
After Cleopatra, it was Alias.
It was Alias. Mm-hmm. So did you feel that there was something holding you back in Alias, or was there opposition to you? That was a more serious role, I think. You know,
No, it was great. You had some serious scenes in that. And I remember talking to J.J. Abrams when they decided to hire me. My audition went something like, okay, you know, I did the scene, and then they said, well, April Webster, who cast it, said, you know, Gina's fluent in Spanish, so would you like Gina to do it in Spanish with a Spanish accent? J.J. said, yeah, sure, yeah, that would be great. So I did it with a Spanish accent. And then I said, because she was written Russian, and I said, I can do it in a Russian accent. He said, are you serious? I said, yeah. Of course I'm serious. You know, it's one of those things I got in my back pocket just for giggles.
Right.
You know, it's just we play with voices and accents. And I did. And what got me the job was I didn't do the scene the same way, because if you're Spanish, you have a different take mm-hmm. on the humor, on the scene, on what's going on. If you're mm-hmm. Russian, you have a different take on the humor on the scene. And when I got the job, I sat there with the writers and JJ, and he says, well, you know, we're thinking of making her Spanish. I said, don't you dare keep her Russian.
And that was what was so much fun about the part.
Exactly.
I mean, you know,
you don't often see a black Russian character.
No, ever. When you, right. see, you see a black Russian character.
You know?
And they exist. And he said, well, don't you think that will be weird? I said, you've got a weird show, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a weird show. And the fact of the matter is you know, the reality is I'm Cuban.
Yeah.
My Cuban family is, you know, runs the range from, you know, very fair skin to very dark skin, and as does all the whole of Cuba, mm-hmm. and a lot of them went to Russia to study.
Mm-hmm. Huh. They're there!
They're there, you know, and not just Cubans, but like all kinds of people are there, and I said, it adds to the mystique of this character. She's a spy. And they actually used it, and they which is a phrase that I use, that I coined. I said, she's just make her the last of the Cold War babies. And that's what they use, and that's how they defined her. And nobody questioned it. Mm. Everybody gets so caught up on what America will believe. And we have these guys in rooms making decisions when the fact of them, and it's happened often, the fact of the matter is, as long as you hire the right person to create the right character, nobody will question it because they'll get sucked into that reality if the writing is right and you're there and it doesn't matter.
Okay, so
yeah, I mean,
if anything, it makes them curious about a backstory. You know, like, tell me more.
I can weave that all the way around back to the Cleopatra thing. I was able to, years later, it came out on DVD, and I was, you know, at the Virgin Megastore buying stuff, and I came across myself. Because there I was with my corset and hot pants, and I bought
I'll
it.
I'll have to pick one of those up. Didn't know it was out in DVD.
And,
you know,
and in the darkness of my home, when nobody was around, I started watching, and I could appreciate what went into it.
With distance.
Mm-hmm. With distance. Because when you're in the middle of it, there's no way that you can take it on.
Yeah.
But with distance, I could really appreciate it. A lot of work went into that. It's fun.
It's also it's back in when that was made, the amount of effects that were done every week was pretty crazy.
Oh, it pushed the envelope.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny, though, if you see any FX shot, it's all half res than the rest of the shots. It clicks back and forth. You can
he's
see.
Their, he's our you can, Uber graphic designer.
Yeah, you'll watch a dialogue scene, and then they'll jump off into some green screen void or however they did it, and then it's low res. But they had to do it. I mean, it was chock full of special effects, and every week, I mean, that just wasn't done back then.
Yeah. And it was a half hour, and how we actually fit story into all that action.
And one room.
Is still amazing. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing to me. So
So now you've said two different sides of sort of geek love that you get. On the one side, you get, there's a little too much love here, and I might get stuck in this room. Right. And on the other hand, they're so loving and accepting that it doesn't matter what I am. It doesn't matter who I am. I mean, that's essentially who the geek is if you look at the early Star Trek model. I mean, Uhura, you know, Chekhov, you know, everybody on the bridge was the United Colors of Benetton.
Right.
So, you know, you have these two different sides of the geek equation. Have you enjoyed that fan base throughout the years, or does that fan base push you to go away from that? Do you want to not be the sci-fi queen in certain ways?
Oh, so not a queen per se.
Oh, or God. Do you embrace it now?
Yeah. No, I do embrace it. It's great fun. It's so varied.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's so many levels to the geekdom, to the fandom, to the, there are people that are just freaks for story, that love the sci-fi world because of where it takes you story-wise. There's the special effects people who want to see how far they can push the envelope and how far they're going and everything in between. There are the women who because in sci-fi you find very strong women.
Right.
And
sort of unusual characters.
And very unusual characters. And you know, everybody's a minority in sci-fi because you got your aliens, you got your race, you got your mutants, you got your, you know.
It is one of the few genres where it seems like race evaporates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't exist in science fiction.
And which is good.
Well,
sort of.
Human race.
Well, as far as within humanity. Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
Yeah. Did you feel, however, that okay? Did you feel, however, within Serenity or within Firefly that you got to go to a different place? But, you know,
what was great
did
about,
you feel like it was a maturity?
Yeah. What was great about Serenity when I read the treatment, the original treatment, Joss ended it with, you know, in capital letters, there are no aliens. There are no, you know, there's no sound in space. There's not, this is, it's us. It's real people.
No rubber masks.
No rubber masks. No, none of that. And so, and it intrigued me because I knew we were getting back to the human drama.
Right.
Of it, of just storytelling. Because I'd done enough of the rest of it and looking at things that weren't there. And
that's
weird, you know, masks and worlds and styrofoam worlds.
you know, the expression on her face.
Picking up big rocks.
Right. Some people are allergic to styrofoam.
That was pantomime. But sorry.
It works great on radio.
Great. So, but yeah, no, it was a maturity. And what was great about it is that I wasn't the eunuch. I wasn't the show eunuch on Serenity and on Firefly. I had a husband. We had a relationship. We there were things that were going on. A lot of the time. Look, whether it's in sci-fi or whether it's present day and a show very much based in reality, it's very difficult to find a grown, strong woman on television who is partnered with a man.
That's true.
And happily.
Who can be his equal. And happily.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
There was a sense, though, of a traditional gender role reversal with that couple. And I'm curious how that was handled, because you don't want to excuse this term, but pussify the guy, because that is unattractive to audience as well. So was there a discussion about introducing that kind of
role? I don't think that happened. I think it was well played.
No, I agree. I was wondering how, if that there was ever a discussion about that, how that was going to be, did it just kind of fall into place?
That's just how, was that's how we rolled.
And how much, and how much it was evolution of character acting between the two of you, and how much of it was actually on the page?
Alan and I found chemistry right away, and that was a lot of fun, and we played with it. And Joss let us, you know, basically let us run with that. It was very scripted. I don't want to say very scripted. It was there. We knew who our roles were. We knew that she was a soldier and he not so much. You know? But it was never, I never felt like it was out of balance, because his gift was that he could fly, and that was a huge turn on to her.
Right.
So it was the yin and yang was very much in place. It just didn't look the way maybe we were used to seeing it.
But that's what was so fantastic about it, is that he was able to take all the conventions that you're used to and just always shift them. It's like there's these moments where you expect Mal to be heroic, you know, and there's things that a hero doesn't do, and then he kicks this guy into an engine, you know. I mean, it's like, and it was that with all the characters. All the characters were nuanced and interesting and different, and they didn't feel like stereotypes. Not one character felt like a stereotype, and that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Where would you like to have gone with the Zoe character? Or where did you see it going? I mean, I know that sometimes Joss has these huge arcs of where his characters go. Did you see it going somewhere very specific and kind of went, oh, I never got to do that?
Well, I kept threatening him with pregnancy. Actually, because I got married during that, somewhere between episode 6 and 7.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
Oh, cool.
They probably would just make your guns bigger and bigger. You'd just be holding it in front of you all the damn time.
Exactly. So I told him, I said, I don't know how long we're going to run, but if we run a long time, Zoe's getting pregnant. Zoe's getting big and knocked up on you. And he said, just give me a year. And to his credit, bless his heart, he said, you know, there is nothing I'd rather see than Zoe big and pregnant, barefoot, on the and like on the loading dock with a gun.
I was gonna say that would be awesome. Yeah.
with a shot like, a, you know, and my having a hormonal breakdown because my gun belt doesn't fit. And,
yeah.
You know, just like having that, that whole thing, just that part of Zoe and, you know, that, that, having, the, you know, having the, having the like the kid on the ship.
Because the gun belt
doesn't fit, or not being able to go out with the guys. And then once the kid, I mean, I had it all in my head, like jumping forward and like the kid goes missing and I find him in Jane's room and I, and we have this talk and I say, Jane, I teach him about shooting. Okay, I, you know, so there's whole.
But see, that's another good point about, you know, those type of characters don't exist much in science fiction. Uh-huh. I mean, I mean that was a show where they did have a, you know, the typical gender role reversal with that couple. Mm-hmm. Then if you did, if that character did get pregnant, the reality of that role reversal would be tested.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's too bad, actually, that, you know, those type of things don't show up more in all genres. And maybe science fiction is the place where they can explore that more often. But I don't think it's actually quite gotten to that point. And I think there's a lot of gals in bikinis with big swords and still a lot of hot pants with guns and stuff going on.
But I think, thanks to some of the influence that I think I've seen come from you, particularly in some of these roles, I think we're starting to see more of a change away from ornamental female characters that are tough. I'm a warrior until I need to be rescued by you. into more actual, real female warriors, you know, or not even warriors necessarily, just stronger women. I'd say like in The Matrix, you played a real woman who was not, she was not a trained soldier, if I remember correctly.
No,
who
she was decided just somebody's wife.
Somebody, but somebody's wife who decided something needed to be done.
Yeah.
Well, it was somebody's wife who's a survivor, you know, everybody was a survivor in there. So everyone's kind of,
true, but we're talking
run
about
through the ringer type of feeling.
But I don't think that lessens.
I think
the
they were just having too many raves
for sure.
you don't even discuss
damn
that.
Damn naked raves.
Damn naked Zion. 10 minute raves.
Or even
you know, it's interesting because Lawrence and I recently saw G.I. Joe.
Okay. Why? Really? Why do you do that to yourself?
You guys seem to
Academy screener.
Have weathered it fairly well. Yeah, you don't seem to have any scars.
No.
Go but see it, Moon.
They're all inside.
It brings up a particular pet peeve of mine, which is you have women who look like they couldn't swat a fly successfully.
Oh my God.
I hate that.
Kicking major ass. And I can't bear it with men any more than I can, you know, bear it with women. And so, and that's a problem. For me, that's a problem because it completely takes me out of reality.
I had a good friend saying the same thing. Yeah. You know, she's a martial artist and she's like, you know, I'm just offended.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There is
I'm just offended, you know.
There was there was a movie called Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh yeah.
That has Keanu Reeves in it. And there is a couple characters in there that women who are the bodyguards, and a hilarious scene where the bodyguards take out their weapons and hysterical the way they're holding the guns.
Oh, yeah. It looked like they're going to break their wrist.
They're doing this like, you know.
Yeah,
it's worth just finding it on YouTube if it's on there because you'll be crying. It's hilarious.
I'd bring it right over to the big screen too, where it's not a matter of guns either. Like Halle Berry is Storm.
Right? Oh.
Let's not talk about that.
Come on.
No, you have to
There's
listen.
A story.
Yeah, this is
you read for Storm, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Oh. No, not a big enough name.
Should have
given my eye teeth. Like Bassett.
Oh my God!
You were Angela Bassett. That is it. Those are the only two people on my radar.
You
for
didn't
that part,
read
you
know? For Storm.
They would not.
That's
see
offensive.
Me. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. No, they would not see me.
That's stupid.
They would not see me.
Maybe they weren't. Maybe they weren't seeing anybody.
I would have been happy to, and I would have played her with a freaking mohawk. Thank you.
Yes.
Very much.
Thank you. Hello.
Wait, she should have been played.
I actually just heard our entire audience base scream at as well. Okay. Like, she knows.
Of course I know. Of course I look. I'm married to, you know, Mr. Comic Book Guy, who
Especially
you know.
Is he really
X-Men in particular. He was just like, you bring the kind. You know. So it was when they thank you. I know it's a side not many people know. Maybe I should have pitched him deeper. say all that to say. I didn't get it. I still don't get it. It makes no sense to me. The other thing that really pisses me off is
Catwoman.
When women get cast as and this is very layered, so bear with me. I'm going around in circles.
That's a good thing.
Get cast in powerful roles, whether it be a soldier, whether it be some chick that kicks ass, whether it be the easy trap is that they butch up. And I'm going to alienate a lot of people here, and I might get hate mail, but okay, Starbuck. It was hard to watch because there was that whole I'm tough thing that you don't have to clench your jaw quite as often, and I think part of the beauty of being powerful as a woman is being powerful as a woman.
Huh? So you and I are boomer fans. I'm with you.
There's no reason. I think part of that for me is, there's the feminine movement, the feminist movement, and when women went into the workforce, especially in the 80s, there was the shoulder pads and the thing and the suits and the...
Right.
I have a question.
You don't have to outman a man to be powerful.
So, what did you do to prepare for all these roles? You held knives, swords, guns. What else did you wield? Anything else?
Angel. I'm going to bring up Angel real quick.
Yeah.
Because I remember you in Angel. You. I don't remember you ever being armed.
Nope.
I don't remember you even throwing that many punches, really.
No.
But there
I
was
threw a car.
Yeah, I remember a couple well placed shoves. Very nicely done. But of all the characters that you've played, I remember that having the most sort of secure, solid center of just absolute certainty of power. And I like that's something I think that is worthy of bringing up in this conversation.
Well, maybe this is part of the same question, is what do you do to prepare yourself so that you don't end up being
a clenched jaw,
the person that you despise? In other words, how do you know that you're holding a gun right?
Not say despise. Let's keep her hate mail to
that you...
it's a peeve.
A peeve, exactly.
Despise. Don't hold up as an example of something to be done.
Yeah, so what do you do to ensure that you feel comfortable in those roles? Like if someone hands you a big-ass gun, do you do anything? Or is that just your nature to be able to hold it correctly?
I think it all depends on the character that you're playing. Look, first of all, you got to be strong enough to hold a big ass gun. And there were sometimes, I'd take 7 when I was holding that damn mare's leg, where I was like, really? Again? Really?
So did you do any?
Because it was so much hotter for everybody to see. You know, inevitably a director would come and goes, no, I just wanted to use one arm. You know, just one. Because this is right. And
right. Two hands is right.
Two hands is right. And then one hand is just sexy.
One hand is John Woo.
So,
So what if I knock my eye out?
Angel too.
Right. ultimately, it's about being true to the character, and who this woman is. And sometimes it's absolutely appropriate to clench your jaw.
Sure. But did you feel like you had to do additional work in order to get to where you needed to? Like any additional training, or did you? Talk to somebody about, hey, does anyone here know how to hold a sword?
We're always done. When there's action involved, there's always a professional. There's always a trainer. There's always, definitely going into Cleopatra 2525, there was a lot of fighting and there was wire work. So I had spent a lot of time with the stunt team doing that. I spent time with the stunt coordinator, fight coordinators on Alias. I fight a lot.
Do you ever have this moment where you're looking at someone and you just think, I could kill you. With all the stuff that I've learned, I could just kill your stupid ass right now.
No.
Not even in traffic? Not even in traffic.
Not even in traffic. I'm so not that girl. I hate to disappoint everybody, but I'm not... I have a temper. and it's the kind of temper that you know, that I would black out and come to and there's blood and skin everywhere. Officer, I don't know what happened.
She went into a fugue state.
She took my Jolly Ranchers and what are you going to do? No, not really, because it's all pretend.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're still learning, you know, like how to take a sword, and
you're also learning how to pull your punches. So how funny would that be? Oh, you and then like miss them by this.
Yeah, by about 6 inches.
That's you know what I'm trained to do.
Right.
That's
true.
Well, like, he didn't go down. That's so odd. Yeah. They always go down. Hard.
So, let me ask you a different question. When you look at how the roles you've played and mm-hmm. the roles that you see being played around you in sci-fi.
Yeah.
So two questions, I guess. The first question would be, what would you like to see happen with the women's roles in sci-fi? What would you want to play that you haven't played before?
Well, I think we can open that up to women's roles.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Like women's roles.
Period. Or what would you want to see?
The way women are being portrayed in cinema right now. I mean, I think.
No. I think women in cinema should eat more. that's me.
It's hard to look at Jennifer Connelly and not agree.
It's, but yeah, I'm Latin, so I have a, you know, my aesthetic is different.
The fullness.
It's just a little different. It's important that we see as much variety as possible. I want to see
if this character.
So many people, I gotta be careful. But I'd like to see a cast of actors that are all over the map ethnically speaking. That that doesn't have a morality tale at the end where you're all crying in church. I'd like to see women. What was wonderful about Firefly, because I do think that was such a wonderful example of mm-hmm. what could happen and what could be done in terms of seeing
this
little microcosm mm-hmm. of people go through a whole bunch of wonderful, interesting, life-changing stuff.
Yeah.
So often in sci-fi, you get so caught up in what the gag is,
mm-hmm.
The special effects of it.
Yeah. That, there's very little accountability for the steps taken.
What do you mean by accountability?
In terms of seeing something through, like, mm-hmm.
Storytelling.
And I think that's what was compelling about Battlestar Galactica is that they really took this arc all the way through and people were in it and seeing it and watching it.
And we said it before that we think that Battlestar sort of does what sci-fi does best, which is to ask difficult questions in extreme circumstances.
Right.
Well, what have you always wanted to play? Do you have a dream role that you've always wanted to do? You didn't get to play the ingenue.
No, I was, you don't really get to play the ingenue when you're a foot taller than most people.
now Peter and I are going to write that tomorrow.
She's a 40-year-old ingenue. but thank you. I appreciate that. I'll give it my best. Or lots of rouge. That's such a weird question. I don't know. I mean, it used to be a question that I could answer, like, who do mm-hmm. I want to play? What do I want to play?
Cyrano.
And the fact is that life changes. And so mm-hmm. I'm all about what's coming next. Mm-hmm. What's around the corner? Mm-hmm. What hasn't been done? What haven't I done?
Right.
And please see me for it.
Right. So do you think any of the inequities that we see, do you think it's more the fault of the writing? Or do you see that it's more the fault of the individual who holds the gun like a pansy?
Or the producer.
Or the producer who let the
guns like pansies.
For example, there's a studio that won't make female action stars, in town because they say they don't make money.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
yeah,
it's
I read
like
that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like where does something, how do you react to that? It's like
because they well
And action is sci-fi right now, pretty
much.
Because
they've made shit movies.
Uh-huh.
with marginal women in leads uh-huh. with marginal writing, yeah. And that does not spell success.
Never.
Sorry,
but yeah.
It just doesn't. And I'm not, you know, I'm not. I'm really not ragging on any of these women necessarily. I should play every lead, and that's not where I'm going. I'm saying
no, we understand that.
I'm saying is what I'm saying is the business is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to make their money back. In fact, they want to make it back before it even hits the theaters. Yeah. They're already calculating what they're going to get, how they're going to get it. And so they think that the best way to do that is to hire the biggest name that they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't put any work into the writing of it. They don't put any...
We've got Angelina Jolie. Why do we need a writer?
Exactly.
What's interesting is... Often they do put a tremendous amount of work into the writing. It just doesn't show up on the screen, you know?
I mean, Catwoman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, they had like 20 years of dusty
scripts. That was a mistake.
But again,
she does Capoeira.
That was a big mistake. I go to something like Iron Man where you had, it's Robert Downey. But then Jon Favreau, who was also an actor and a
writer also geeks.
And a producer and a director and awesome. And they were able to, as guys, I guess, you know, Robert Downey said, no, we got to work on this. We can do better than this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So often women aren't given that opportunity because we're guns for hire. We're not in positions of power to say we got to do better than this.
That's an interesting point.
That's a really
well.
Interesting
it
point.
It has happened. Like, you know, Sigourney Weaver fits that role in her now. It's almost her franchise now in a way, and it didn't go in a
what Alien?
Yeah, yeah. It didn't go in a way that was successful, even though she was the one who was putting her foot down, and making changes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know the way Hollywood works now, especially right now, is they're only looking for the formula to make money. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're getting only toy franchises,
right?
But unfortunately that's just, you know, how it works. You can break a mold any way you want to. You can do absolutely anything on screen. If it's done right, people are going to, you know,
they're
going to
love it. They're going to embrace it. I mean, part of...
Now, it may not make money, though.
No, well, part of what I believe made Matrix so crazy successful is, yes, you had Keanu, and you had this little-known actor, Lawrence Fishburne, playing...
Tiny. He's good, though.
He's good. I think that did a lot for him.
He's cute.
I know, right? But but so you have Keanu in the center of it. What was wonderful about Lawrence is that, you know, he's alchemical, and I don't just say that because I sleep with him. But he has the ability to shift and move. Mm-hmm. And then you had, who the fuck was Carrie Ann Moss?
Right,
right.
You know, who, you know.
Well, nobody
who
the hell else. Was,
so basically you had Keanu, you had this force of Lawrence, but none of those people, for the exception of maybe Keanu, had baggage,
mm-hmm.
had star celebrity baggage. Mm-hmm. So when you were thrust into this world,
mm-hmm.
you were like, I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important to do. It's particularly in the genre to which we're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to bring as many people who don't have baggage so that you can just go just go along with the ride.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they did with Superman. They said with Superman, they hired Christopher Reeve, who's an unknown, because you wouldn't believe that Robert Redford could fly.
Or the Curious Case of Benjamin Button, where you're just watching the entire thing going like, wow, how'd they do that to Brad Pitt? Like, you're not really watching the story. Right. You're just like, wow, look what they did.
That's cute that you guys are talking about art and shit. But the fact is, if you cast me as Benjamin Button, that thing wouldn't have made... shit for money.
Two dimes.
Well,
I mean, here's the thing, you were really good. That is not the case.
But you don't know.
There's two movies
Aaron,
out.
You
right.
could take lessons.
No, no, there's two movies right out now.
District 9.
District 9 compared to Transformers 2. I guarantee you that District 9 won't make 1/100th the amount of money.
It'll make 1/100th.
I would like to review that in 8 weeks or 10 years. You know, and see how many people are talking about Transformers 2 in 10 years as opposed to how many people are still talking about District 9.
No, no. You're confusing. I agree with you about the art part.
I'm not agreeing about the money follows art.
I'm also talking about long-term income.
Like, Transformers 2 may make a heck of a lot more in 1 year.
I'm telling you, if they release District 9 every year for 10 years, it will not make as much money as Transformers 2.
What I'm just enjoying is watching Gina's face as she watches you guys go at each other. She's just like, this is normal for us.
All the Taurus fans are like, can we fast forward through this?
I've never seen two friends trying to choke each other out like this.
It's kind of our thing.
Okay, so with Matrix 2 and 3.
Yeah.
There was a sense, at least critically, of people falling off of the bandwagon of what Matrix 1 had. What do you think was lacking in Matrix 2 and 3, if you can answer that, that didn't...
It's gonna peg you to the wall.
You know, I think the writing was still wonderful. Mm-hmm. I think that the trilogy that they crafted was really... you know, quite ingenious. But they drank the Kool-Aid. You know, they took their own pill and they started stunt casting. Mm-hmm. And they leaned so heavily into the special effects world that you lost the intimacy that you had in the first Matrix.
Right.
You know, what was so exciting about the first Matrix is those close ups and you're going, hot damn, those actors are really doing that.
Yeah.
They're really in the JoJo. Yeah. They're really on, that's how the hell did that happen? Yeah. And Matrix 1 asked
difficult questions. And I felt like Matrix 2 and 3 didn't ask those questions. It sort of tried to...
They were trying to answer them and then brought up some more questions.
Right.
But I didn't care as much because the stakes weren't so high.
Right.
I wasn't as invested because now I'm watching a cartoon as opposed to a real
Exactly.
Man.
Yeah.
He was already Superman.
Yeah.
And well, how do you make him human again?
Character had already been let go at that point.
Well,
there was no character development after that. Well,
in Star Wars and in Matrix 2, I did two things. Like Star Wars 1, 2, and 3, I went, midichlorians?
Oh.
And when I watched Matrix 2, I went Merovingian? And it was like the two sort of like, this is like if same like why did you go there?
If I may, the first Matrix had such an incredibly strong theme.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, every page in some way talks about belief.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't believe this. Do you believe this? In belief in some way. And that's what it was about. It was about him coming to have belief in himself. Once the second and third started, there was no question for him. There was no theme that was being explored like that. Within his character.
Right.
There was no way to, you know, they didn't know how to reset that bar.
Right.
And because the first one, since everything was about belief and since it had explored all those different philosophical questions about, you know, belief and trust and faith, I mean, it just, what else was there left to explore? And they did explore some things. They did really do it, but it just...
It didn't get there. But they were trying.
Not quite. But you do have sort of that, a loss of innocence with the... with Morpheus, which I thought was really wonderful because he was the guy that was driving the first one, and then suddenly it's like what? So I do think that they still touched on that.
It may not have been
where people thought it would be,
or maybe what you're saying is those things were being said, but they were being outshouted by all the
effects and
all the grandeur of
ghostly twins evaporating through walls.
Yeah.
It's holding a light bulb against the sun. You don't see the light bulb anymore.
There were other characters that had things that were going on that were really powerful, but you know your Superman character didn't have anything to resonate off of to make it all kind of gel together.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
where did you see your character within that? within the worlds of the 2 and 3? I mean,
very little, actually. Not as much as I'd like to.
By the way, before we move off of this a little bit, is you worked on the video game.
Yeah.
How was working on video? Have you done any more video game stuff?
No, I just did that one time.
Yeah, how did you like that?
Because the voice of Niobe, because that was a part that I was up for.
How did
it was,
you?
It was between Jada and I.
How did you like that? I was wondering.
You know, it was fun. I love doing voice work. Mm-hmm. It's very freeing and there's no makeup involved and
right.
And
you just show up and do it.
You just show up and you do it and to know that you're kind of guiding somebody and giving information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my husband's a little bit of a gamer. So as I'm, you know, I hang out with him sometimes while he's Prince of Persia or something, and I listen to the, listen to the voiceovers that they do, and I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, they're god awful.
Who did that? So I'm proud that I can, you know, that I was able to maybe
when they hire non-union.
Well, you mean that video game was, I mean, it was known for the great story and great acting in it. I mean, that was one of the pluses. I think
only
the video
game design had come up to match.
I think that the game ended up having problems, but it always the plus score on it was if you can just get through the game, it's got a great story, and it, you know, you have to.
The problem is that disclaimer at the beginning. If you can play through the game, you get some awesome voice acting and story.
Yeah.
So, that's the issue. That's absolutely the issue.
Mm. Hey, does your husband play board games? Because if he does that, he should just hang with us. Comic books, video games, board games.
No, we seriously need to have some X-Men discussion.
Yeah. We should bring.
Can we get Fish on the show? And we can talk about X-Men.
We'll talk X-Men.
Yeah, ask him yourself.
All right.
She says, looking for the exit. Yeah.
Do you ever read a role and you think, yeah, that was written by a white guy in Idaho? You know, he has
Every day.
Really? He has no clue.
By the way, as a white guy from Idaho, I resent that.
As a white guy from Idaho, you resemble that.
I resemble that remark.
How dare you?
Oh, God.
Really?
Come
on, alienate some more. Come on.
I'll never work in this town again. With all due respect to the white guys from Idaho.
Thank you.
Really, I don't think it's an individual thing. I think, honestly, people who write want to write interesting things. People who write want, you know, are creative individuals who want to write things that no one has seen, who mm-hmm. want to put up images that no one has seen, and situations. And then they also want to eat and get paid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
If you can combine the two, that would be fantastic. Unfortunately, I think we're still being the creative is still being dictated to by the financial
and the forces
and
that be
and the forces that be and so it tends to choke us out a little bit because
we know the dollars are there, if we know that the sci-fi, as we said in this interview, that the sci-fi audience will accept it if it's given. How do you change the directive?
You're talking about images that have been in place for a long time, and I really do mean images. And as a woman and a woman of color an indefinable ethnicity on screen.
Right.
This is something that I come up against quite a bit because you're moving up against people who want as vast a variety to tune in. You know, they want mm-hmm. they want their what do you call that? They want their demographic. Mm-hmm. They want to pull in their demographic and whatever they believe their demographic happens to be. Mm-hmm. And if you don't fit within a demographic, if you're not attractive or if they believe that you're not attracted to that demographic, then there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are attracted to quality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so these are this is something that has to be and it only takes one person. It takes one hit for them to want to replicate that, mm-hmm. and then they start going, "Oh, well, then we need our this and we need our that, and
let's
we
make
need
this
let's
widget.
Make this one again.
We need a black female as a superhero." Just like last Moneymaker.
ridiculous.
And then it'll
We're
happen.
Geniuses.
And then it'll happen. I think it's really all about industry meeting creativity.
Yeah.
Instead of choking it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you sound like you have fantastic ideas on all of this. Have you ever considered producing yourself?
I have.
And
writing as well. You know, there are a couple of things running around in my head that I have been challenged to actually put down on paper. So
excellent.
I'm doing that.
Do it. Bring it.
If you're ever interested in having a dramatic reading of it somewhere, say in a very prestigious podcast out there, we could probably supply a nice.
Okay. Very good.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
We're there for you.
I will say that I am a new cast member on ABC's Flash Forward.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, ooh. Congratulations. So, that looks fantastic.
Look for me on that. That
I know
like
a
fun.
Producer on there. It sounds very exciting.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah, sounds great.
She has told me nothing,
good.
Of course.
And they've told me nothing. They just tell me when to show up. no spoiler alert here.
You don't know your lines yet. That's it's interesting.
Yeah, what else you got coming up? Anything?
No. Anything? Do it?
Well, that's pretty big.
A Drop Dead Diva? I did a Drop Dead Diva. That's coming out.
Awesome. Okay. Cool. We'll take a look for that.
There's always something. Oh, a movie that I did with Lawrence, the only movie that I did with Lawrence called Five Fingers is actually out on DVD.
Okay, cool.
So look for that.
So if anybody wants to know more about Gina Torres, is there a place that perhaps they could go?
They can. My website. I have a website. It is www.gina-torres.com.
So the crazy fan owns the one that's not a dash.
Yes! Ah!
That's hilarious.
Yes, I thought, boy, let me tell you.
They're not giving it up?
The guy that was designing my website said, yeah, you know, and these people buy up, you know, these actors' names and then they mm-hmm. have to buy their names
and
back.
They sit
and
on
I
it.
Said, you're not going to have a what?
Oh, so it wasn't a fan. It was somebody.
I have no idea.
Somebody cyber squatting. Yeah.
I have no idea who it was, but I really didn't think it was one of those. Oh, somebody fucking brought my name.
I've heard fans reacting quickly after saying they buy things and then gift them to the actors sometimes. I've heard that happen.
Well, my name has not come back to me in a bow.
Yeah, you probably got...
Maybe not!
You probably got a cyber squatter who makes money off of... Oh, yeah, that's not a fan. That's a dude who's bought thousands of stuff.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah. Bummer.
Well, so Dash. What's going on. It's Dash.
Yeah. Gina and, it, and if you get
Dash
there...
Torres.
The Gina-Torres.com.
T-O-R-R-E-S.
Yes.
.com.
T.O. And we might go under construction and build it up and make it special, but there's
actually,
a lot of stuff.
Your site is really well designed.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
I mean,
thank you. My video clips aren't working right now, but you can get in and see pictures and learn some things.
All right.
Cool.
Thank you.
No. Now, you discussed doing Shakespeare at the beginning of all this. Is there any chance of you returning to the stage? And
there's always a chance of me returning to the stage.
You were just on the stage recently, weren't you? In the last couple of years?
No.
You weren't?
No, it's been a while.
Oh. All right, yeah. We'll get her on the stage.
I'd love to see you doing some
been
Shakespeare.
Cherry Orchard.
Thank you. Cherry Orchard.
Get that Russian.
Gina Torres.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Shakespearean heroine?
No.
Viola.
No, it's oh yeah, Viola. Viola. No, yeah. No. I got really close to playing Lady M.
Ooh.
Once, but I had to actually leave the country and do some work, so I couldn't.
Oh.
The schedules didn't. Yeah.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Yeah, but
well.
There are plenty of roles that I can grow into happily. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I'm not done. So
bring it, Gina Torres.
As long as everybody keeps watching.
Thank you. Yay. We will make sure they do.
Thank you very much for being here with us this evening.
Thanks for asking.
Geeklings, Gina Torres!
Bye, everybody.